Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Okay, good evening, everyone. Okay, last week we started to discuss the Kitagiri Sutta. This is the discourse that the Buddha gave in the town of Kitagiri. And this is Sutta number 70 in the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle-length discourses. And the section of the sutta that I'm focusing on is the section where the Buddha explains the seven types. He's speaking about seven types of noble disciples, which he calls seven kinds of persons found existing in the world. This is a passage which he introduces it with paragraph number 12 and 13. But the analysis actually starts with paragraph 14, where he enumerates the seven kinds. Then last time, I spoke about the first two types on this list. These are two types of arahants. The first is the one liberated in both ways. This is called in Pali, ubhato bhaga vimutta, one liberated in two respects. This is the arahant who is liberated from all defilements through wisdom and thereby freed from samsara, from the cycle of birth and death. And then through the development of very profound samadhi, he is able to reach the formless meditations, the peaceful liberations transcending forms. And some even reach the what's called the cessation of perception and feeling. And in this way, this type of arhat is considered liberated from the material body or from form. So in this way, this type is considered liberated in both ways. The other kind analyzed or defined in paragraph 16 is called the one liberated by wisdom, panya vimutta. This type is also liberated from all defilements through wisdom and thereby freed from the cycle of birth and death. But he doesn't develop that very profound samadhi to the point where he can achieve the formless meditations. And so he's not considered to be liberated from the form body. So this arhat's samadhi power is not as deep as that of the one liberated in both ways. Okay, and the Buddha says of both of these two types, he's speaking about monks, he says, both of these two types do not have any work to do with diligence because they have done their work with diligence, and so they are no longer capable of being heedless, of being negligent. Okay, now the Buddha is going to speak about those types of monks who still have work to do with diligence. These are the ones who are called the trainees, or the disciples in higher training. And now there will come three types who are definitely have reached at least the first fruition, the first stage of realization. They've reached at least the stage of stream entry. But they've, of course, they have not yet reached arhatship. These three types, defined in paragraphs 17, 18, and 19, are called the body witness in paragraph 18, the one attained to view, and then in paragraph 19, the one that's translated, and I say with some reservations, which I'll explain, as one liberated by faith. I'll write these Pali words. Now, of these three types, one can't say just from their type that one is necessarily at a higher level than the other, because these three types can be anywhere from the stage of stream entry to non-returner. In fact, they could be even beyond non-returner. They could even be practicing for the attainment of the fruit of arhatship without yet having reached it. So it could be that somebody is a saddhavimutta, one who's liberated by faith, and he's practicing for the attainment of the fruit of arhatship, whereas somebody else is a kayasaki, a body witness, but he's just a stream enterer. And somebody might be a dittipatta, one who has attained to view, and he might be a non-returner, once returner. So all three types could be at any of these three levels: stream enterer, once returner, or non-returner. So how are the three distinguished? They're distinguished by way of their dominant faculty. Okay, the one called the body witness, this is a person. We have the definition here. The person who contacts with the body and dwells in those liberations that are peaceful and immaterial, transcending forms. And some of his taints, some of his defilements are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom. That kind of person is called a body witness. That is, this person has eliminated to some extent the defilements through wisdom. He hasn't fully eliminated the taint of sensuality, the taint of craving for existence, or the taint of ignorance, but he's eliminated a certain percentage of those taints, to some degree that those taints have been destroyed through wisdom. And this kind of person is able to enter into the formless attainments. And the Buddha says, if this, he's referring to the monk, this kind of monk says, still has work to do with diligence. For what reason? Because when this person makes use of suitable dwelling places and associates with good friends and balances his spiritual faculties, those are the five faculties of faith, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, then he may, by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge, here and now enter and dwell in the supreme goal of the spiritual life, for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the home life into homelessness. So the Buddha says, seeing this fruit of diligence for such a monk, I say that he still has work to do with diligence. Okay, now the second type is a person called attained to view, dittipatto. Okay, now this person does not contact with the body and dwell in those liberations that are peaceful and immaterial, transcending forms. But some of his taints are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom. And he has reviewed and examined with wisdom the teachings or the dhammas proclaimed by the Tathagata. Okay, so this person doesn't reach the formless attainments, destroys the taints, the defilements, partly through wisdom, and his special way of practice is by examining the teachings, the Dhamma, with wisdom. So it's wisdom that destroys the taints, and you could say that the vehicle of practice for this person is investigation or examination of the teaching.
I'm just going to move this over.
So we could see a pretty direct connection here, right? Between the Ubbatobhaga Vimutta Arhat, that's the Arhat who's liberated in both ways, and the body witness, the Kaya Sakhi. Both of them achieve the formless meditations, the formless samadhis. But the difference is that the one liberated in both ways has developed the wisdom to the point that all of the defilements are eradicated. But for the trainee, the body witness, the defilements are only partly eliminated. And then we could see a connection between the one attained to view, the dittipatta, and the wisdom liberated arhat, panyavimutta. Both of them lack the formless meditations. Both of them use wisdom to cut off defilements, but the wisdom liberated arhat has eradicated all the defilements, whereas the dittipatta, the one attained to view, has eliminated defilements only partly. But now we have a third kind of person on the path, a third kind of trainee. And this is the one, it's come down in Pali under the name Sadavimutta, which is translated liberated by faith. But I'm convinced that this name is a result of a transcription error, a scribal error. Because the one liberated by faith, in fact, is not yet liberated. And there's another word which is closely connected with faith, the function of faith. This word is adimuti. I think in Chinese it's xinjie. Right? In Pali it's adimuti. In Sanskrit, adimukti, the past participle, would be adimutta, and in Sanskrit, adimukta. It comes from the same root as vimutta, which means liberated. But adimukti has the meaning of resolution or determination. It's based on the same root, muchati, or the root is much, and the verb muchati. Because when one makes a resolution, one releases oneself upon that which one resolves on. So it has that sense of releasing oneself and dedicating oneself to that which one has resolved on. Sort of one lets go of one's reservations, inhibitions, and fully plunges into that which one is dedicated to. And now what happens, you see, in Pali and Sanskrit, when you take the word sadda, ending in the long A, and you add this past participle, adimutta, to it, this is in Pali, you get sadda, the A of adimutta joins with the A of sadda, so you get sadadimutta. And now in English, we represent this the sound by two letters, but in Indian alphabet, Sinhala alphabet, Burmese alphabet, probably Thai alphabet, this the is just one letter. And in contemporary Devanagari, I think the is something like this, and the V is something like this. Not that in ancient times that they were using the modern Devanagari, but probably the characters were somewhat similar. or it could have been in some other script, but just through copyists making a mistake, because we have upato bhaga vimuta, panya vimuta, so why not sada vimuta? So the sadadi muta, which was probably the original word, got changed to sadavimuta. And I checked just before, I checked the Abhidharma Kosha, which is this Sanskrit Abhidharma work, to see what it has for this. It also lists these types of disciples. And it has Shraddhadimukta. So it supports my hypothesis. Shraddha is the Sanskrit form of Saddha. And so it doesn't really mean liberated by faith, but it means one who is resolved through faith. So this is somebody who is practicing determinately based on faith. Okay, then we have the definition or of the person liberated by faith or resolved through faith. Here, some person does not contact with the body and abide in those liberations that are peaceful and immaterial transcending forms, but some of his taints are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom. Okay, up to that point, very similar to the one attained to view. And his faith is planted, rooted, and established in the Tathagata. This kind of person is called one liberated by faith or resolved through faith. Okay, so this type of person differs from the previous kind in that for both, they will be liberated through wisdom, because it's wisdom that cuts off the defilements. But the one who is attained to view, or maybe it should be one who is attained through view, is one who emphasizes wisdom, the investigation and examination of the teachings or of the principles made known by the Buddha. The other is the more emotional type, who undertakes the practice based on planting faith, trust and confidence in the Buddha. Okay, so all three of these, the Buddha says, still have work to do with diligence. Okay, and now we come to two other types. Well, maybe I should ask whether there's any questions on these three types. Yeah.
The question I have is the one liberated by faith, to use the term here. Is he likely to reach arahanthood through both ways or through panna?
That's a good question. From the way it's defined, it seems likely that he'll reach arhatship as panyavimutta. But this is what occurs to me. We don't have to think that the dittipato or the sadavimutta are necessarily have to reach as panyavimutta, even though they might have arrived at that position in that particular way, the dittipato through wisdom, the sadavimutta through faith. Once they are there, They might then go on through their interest to develop the samadhi to deeper and deeper levels till they reach the formless meditations. So then they might come out reaching arhatship as both ways liberated, ubhato bhaga vimutta.
Bhante, if you could explain just the words contact with the body or not contact with the body.
Yeah. In fact, it's not completely clear to me. The commentary gives a definition saying that it means that he contacts it with the mental body. He uses the expression namakaya. It means the collection of the mind and mental factors. It seems to me that this is the way the commentary works, having to find a very like rigorous technical explanation for what I take to be an expression that was originally intended perhaps to be just more suggestive rather than to have a technical meaning. I would say, in my opinion, that it was intended more just to suggest the kind of vividness of the experience, the power and vividness of that experience. And that we don't have to tie it to a kind of technical explanation in terms of a mental body as contrasted with a physical body. That the experience might have been considered, felt as so powerful that it was as though one were actually touching it with the body. Any other question? Okay, then we'll go on to the next two. Now we have two types of persons who have just entered the way to stream entry. They have not yet attained stream entry. Okay, these two are called in Pali, the Dhammanusari and the Sadanusari. Anusari means going along with, following along with, practicing in accordance with. Okay, and so we have, so here is translated follower, the Dhamma follower and the faith follower. And then we have a definition. First, in paragraph 20, the definition of the Dhamma follower. What kind of person is a Dhamma follower? Here, some person does not contact with the body and abide in those liberations that are peaceful and immaterial, transcending forms, and his taints are not yet destroyed by his seeing with wisdom. He hasn't seen anything with wisdom yet. He hasn't destroyed the defilements. He hasn't destroyed any defilements yet with wisdom. But those teachings proclaimed by the Tathagata are accepted by him after reflecting on them sufficiently with wisdom. Okay, he accepts the teachings after meditating on them, reflecting on them to some extent through wisdom. Further, he has these qualities. He has the faculties, the five faculties of faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. So this person is called a Dhamma follower, and then the Buddha says this person still has work to do with diligence. Then we come to the definition of the faith follower. Here some person does not contact with the body and dwell in those liberations that are peaceful and immaterial, transcending forms, and his taints are not yet destroyed by his seeing with wisdom. Okay, so he doesn't have the formless meditations and hasn't yet cut off any defilements with wisdom. And now the strong point, the emphasis of this practitioner, he has sufficient faith in and love for the Tathagata. The text says, Tathagate chasa saddha matang hoti pema matang. One also could have translated this, he has merely faith for the Tathagata, merely love or devotion for the Tathagata. But it doesn't seem possible that one could become definitely set on the way to stream entry through faith and love, faith and devotion. One has to have some degree of wisdom or insight. But this disciple also has the five faculties. He has, besides faith, he has energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. So this kind of person is called the faith follower, the sadhanusari. And the way I would understand the difference between the Dhamma follower and the faith follower, to enter the way leading to stream entry, this has to be achieved through wisdom or insight. Without wisdom or insight into the truth of the Dhamma, to some extent, it's impossible to get onto the path. But for the Dhamma follower, the way to get that degree of insight into the Dhamma comes about through examining the teachings. His motivation is this drive to understand the truth about things. So he hears the teaching, reflects on the teaching, examines the teaching, tries to understand the teaching. His motivation is this drive to understand. Whereas in the case of the faith follower, the motivation is the faith in the Buddha, devotion to the Buddha. And that devotion becomes the motivation for undertaking the practice that will bring the development of the five faculties to the point where through wisdom one is able to get enough insight to enter onto the path. Now there's another sutta, it's actually a series of suttas that comes in the Saṅyutta Nikāya. It's called the Okanti Saṅyutta, Connected Discourses. Oh, I took the wrong volume. Connected Discourses on Entering. This was on the handout that we gave out last week. Everybody has a copy of it. I think I know it by memory. Let's see if I could get it by memory. The I is impermanent, changing, becoming otherwise, right? Okay. One who resolves on these teachings, these dhammas, and places faith in them, is called a faith follower. Is that correct so far? Now, what comes out in English, one who resolves on these teachings and places faith in them, in Pali is adimuchati sadahati. The verb there, adimuchati is the verb from which adimuti is derived. And sadahati is the verb from which sadda is derived. So we could see that sadda, faith, and adimuti, resolve, are closely connected. So that's why we get sadadimuta, resolve through faith. Okay, so one who resolves on these teachings and places faith in them is called a faith follower. Such a one has transcended the plane of the worldling, the ordinary person, has arrived at the plane of the noble ones, is incapable of taking rebirth in any of the three planes of misery, the hells, the animal realm, the plane of the hungry ghosts or the afflicted spirits, is incapable of doing any deed by which they might be reborn in hell, in the animal realm, or in the realm of afflicted spirits, and is incapable of passing away without having realized the fruit of stream entry. Correct? Word for word, correct? Okay, one who knows and sees these teachings thus is called a stream enterer. One who is fixed in destiny, no longer capable of being reborn in the lower worlds, bound for full enlightenment. Okay. So that is the faith follower. Now, though it says that this disciple places faith in this teaching and resolves on it, that the eye is impermanent, all of the sense faculties are impermanent, but the way I think this should be understood is that the disciple actually has to see this with insight, not just hearing that the eye is impermanent and then believing this out of faith. Just by believing it out of faith, one can't become definitely on the way to stream entry. But when one hears this, one has faith in it, one has trust in the Buddha as the enlightened one, one has trust in the Dhamma as the teaching of the way things are, then based on that faith, one undertakes the practice that brings insight. And then through the undertaking the practice, one sees that the eye, ear, nose, and so on are impermanent, changing, and becoming otherwise. The other disciple now, the eye is impermanent, changing, becoming otherwise. One who has gained an acceptance of this by considering it, contemplating it to some extent through wisdom, is called a Dhamma follower. Then all the rest is the same. One who has transcended the plane of the worldling or ordinary person, who has arrived at the plane of the noble ones, who is incapable of doing any deed by which they might be reborn in hell, the animal realm, the realm of ghosts, and is incapable of passing away without having reached the fruit of stream entry, then one who knows and sees these things thus, is that the way it goes? Is called a stream enterer, and so on, who is bound for, who is fixed in destiny, no longer capable of rebirth in the lower realms, bound for enlightenment. Okay, so in the case of the Dhamma follower, rather than simply accepting this teaching on faith and investigating out of faith, or practicing insight on the basis of faith, there comes this urge for a deep understanding, this drive to comprehend, this sort of need to grasp intellectually and understand the nature of things, and that becomes the motivation for the practice of insight. And then when that investigation, that inquiry through insight reaches its culmination, when one sees through the conditioned into the full understanding, or actually the direct knowledge of the Four Noble Truths, that marks the breakthrough to the attainment of stream entry. And with that, one comes out, with the attainment of stream entry, then one comes out as either Sadavimutta, Dittipatta, or Kayasaki. Now this will be the interesting point. Okay. If one starts out as a Sadanusari, how is one going to wind up as a stream enterer? How?
The one liberated by faith, presumably.
Yeah. It's almost certain that one will be one liberated by faith. Now, if one starts off as a Dhammanusari, how is one going to come out as a stream enterer?
One attained to view,
because it says that the Dhamma follower is one who does not contact with the body and abide in those liberations that are peaceful and formless. And so it seems this raises an interesting question. And I haven't seen this discussed in any commentary. What happens to the meditators? And there must have been these meditators in the time of the Buddha. There would have been yogis, would have been practicing as, you know, as ascetics in the Himalayas, in the forests, before meeting the Buddha's teachings, and they would have been, you know, masters of the arupa jhanas, and yet maybe something was, they would have been dissatisfied with their practice. Something would have led them to the Buddha, and they would have realized, like, this is the way to enlightenment. Then they would have learned the Buddha's teaching and started to practice. And so they would have been, according to their way of practice, they wouldn't qualify as either Dhammanusari or Sadanusari, because by definition, those two don't have the formless attainments. Yet here one has a meditator who possesses the formless attainment. What happens? I haven't seen it discussed in any commentary. But my own speculation would be that they probably don't go through these two stages, but probably because they already have sufficient foundation of strong samadhi, that once they get the teaching of panya, the teaching of wisdom, that as soon as they apply their mind to it, they're able to go directly from the stage of an ordinary, so-called ordinary person directly to the stage of kayasaki, body witness, without having to go through these two preliminary stages. But that's just my opinion. I haven't seen this discussed. I haven't even seen the problem raised in any traditional commentary. Okay, any questions on this?
I guess the question I have is for the one we're speaking about who's liberated in both ways, who didn't enter the bottom level. Is it fair to say that they don't need to have faith?
No, they definitely will have faith. They'll have faith as one of the five faculties. Yeah. But they're just not going through this stage of preliminary contemplation in which they are, yeah, they would have to have, in order to accept the Buddha as teacher and to accept the teachings as a basis for practice, they would have to have that kind of preliminary faith.
But it wasn't the history of their awakening doesn't involve an initial faith that got them started necessarily the way that one of the faith followers would have started. It sounds like.
Their kind of faith would be different. It would be just like a willingness to place trust in the Buddha as a guide. It would be less of an emotional, devotional type of faith.
Faith follower and the Dharma follower, I notice, are considered transcendent. They transcend the world, I know.
Yes, both the faith follower and the Dharma follower have passed beyond the stage of the worldling. Both of them are definitely on the way to stream entry. So in terms of we have the other scheme of classification, which is out of the eight types of noble persons. And in that scheme, we have the stream enterer and the one who is practicing for the attainment of the fruit of stream entry. In that scheme, the faith follower and the Dhamma follower would be two different types of persons who are practicing for the attainment of the fruit of stream entry. They're definitely on the path, yeah. They are path attainers, attainers of the path to stream entry. Yes, Eva.
You see, the faith follower is placed below the Dhamma follower. The reason that he's definitely not weaker, here we mentioned about it.
That's talking about the mental faculties. Where was that note? The note in this middle-length discourses. Oh, I see. Oh, in the handout. Okay. I know what it is then. Okay, I know what it is. Yeah, that's because, you see, there's a classification within the way they rank the different disciples in order. The Dhamma follower is placed higher than the faith follower because his faculties are considered stronger than that of the faith follower. Especially his faculty of wisdom is stronger than that of the faith follower. Yeah, it's the five spiritual faculties, especially the faculty of wisdom. Yeah.
Just one other quick question. In describing the Dharma follower, it says his taints are not yet destroyed by his seeing with wisdom, but those teachings proclaimed by the Tathagata are accepted after being pondered to a sufficient degree with wisdom. Two uses of the word wisdom. Are they different kinds of wisdom?
No, it's the same wisdom. It's just that the wisdom that he's exercising has not yet reached sufficient strength, power, sharpness to be able to cut off defilements. But it's the wisdom which examines the nature of phenomena.
Which is, in some ways, I guess, weaker? A weaker form of the same wisdom? Doesn't...
Oh, it's much weaker. It's not yet reached. In order to cut off defilements, it has to be much stronger. Okay, just go quickly through the rest of the sutta. If we remember, the Buddha has been giving an admonition to these monks of Kitagiri who had been rather lax in their training. And so now the Buddha says that final knowledge is not achieved all at once, not suddenly, but rather it's achieved by a gradual training, gradual practice, gradual progress. And then paragraph 23, he explains some of the steps of the gradual progress, gradual practice. And so first, a disciple, in order to set out on the path, has to have faith in the teacher. In order to visit him, and to visit him, he has to pay respects. Then when paying respects, he has to give ear, that means to lend an ear to the teaching. Especially in the Buddha's time, there were no written teachings, so you have to listen to the teaching. Then when one hears the teaching, this is the Dhamma, then one has to remember it or retain it in mind. Then when one retains the teachings in mind or memorizes the teachings, then one has to examine the meaning of the teachings. Okay, then after one examines the meaning of the teachings, then one comes to accept these teachings through reflection, as a result of reflection. One sort of gives an intellectual acknowledgement or acceptance of the teachings. And interestingly, this word that's translated acceptance here in Pali is the word kanti, which also is translated as patience. So intellectual acceptance and patience both have in common this idea of accepting something which is difficult to accept. Okay, then when one gains this reflective acceptance of the teaching, then zeal or enthusiasm springs up. Then when enthusiasm springs up, then one applies the will. Then when one applies the will, then one scrutinizes. This I take to be the investigation with insight. This is not just examining the meaning of the teaching, but this is actually investigating the nature of phenomena. Then when one investigates, then one strives. Now one is striving intensely for realization. Then as one strives resolutely, then one realizes with the body. Again, that word body comes. Again, I think this is used to show that fullness, that intensity of the experience. He realizes with the body the supreme truth. This is Parama Satchang. This is taken to be the attainment of Nibbana. And one sees it by penetrating it with wisdom. Okay, so this is the step-by-step training. And now the Buddha is going to be scolding these monks who have been living quite a lax and luxurious life. He says, there has not been that faith, there has not been that visiting, there has not been that paying of respect, and so on and so on. there has not been that striving. Bhikkhus, you have lost your way. You have been practicing the wrong way. How far you have strived, misguided men, from this Dhamma and discipline. Then the Buddha says there is a four-phrase statement, and when it is recited, a wise man would quickly understand it. I shall recite it to you. Try to understand it. This is a little obscure. I couldn't quite figure out what the four-phrase statement is. But then the Buddha says, even with a teacher who is concerned with material things, an heir to material things, attached to material things, such haggling or bargaining by his disciples would not be proper. If we get this, we'll do it. If we don't get this, we won't do it. So what should be said in the case of the Tathagata who is utterly detached from material things? People think the Buddha is always very soft and gentle, but sometimes he's very stern. This is a place where he's very stern. He says, for a faithful disciple who is intent on fathoming the teacher's dispensation or the teacher's message, it is proper that he conduct himself thus. The Blessed One is the teacher. I am a disciple. The Blessed One knows, I do not know. For a faithful disciple who is intent on fathoming the teacher's dispensation, the teacher's dispensation or the teacher's message is nourishing and refreshing. For a faithful disciple who is intent on fathoming the teacher's dispensation, it is proper that he conduct himself thus. And these are very strong words. Willingly let only my skin, sinews, and bones remain, and let the flesh and blood dry up on my body, but my energy shall not be relaxed so long as I have not attained what can be attained by manly strength, manly energy, and manly persistence. For a faithful disciple who is intent on fathoming the teacher's dispensation, one of two fruits may be expected, either final knowledge here and now, or if there is a trace of clinging left, non-return. Okay, that is the end of the sutta. And it says that the bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Buddha's words. Okay, any questions?
It looks like to me the four-phrase statement is the whole last paragraph. Where he said, after each time he says bhikkhus for a faithful disciple who is intent, he says that four times. Paragraph 27.
That could be the case. Maybe that is the case. I couldn't figure it out. I think the commentary says the Four Noble Truths, but there's no mention of the Four Noble Truths in the sutta. Then I thought that it might be that resolution for arousing energy, willingly let only my skin, sinews, and bones remain. But I didn't see how to get exactly four phrases. But you might be right, actually. That's a very good suggestion. Yeah. Any further questions? Okay, then we will stop this evening. Then the next classes will be now on May 1st. Yeah, a little different from what I announced earlier, but May 1st and May 8th. Excuse me? Oh, I'm sorry, right, yeah. And it's Majjhima Nikaya Sutta number 12. This is the greater discourse on the lion's roar. Particularly, I want to go over the 10 powers of the Tathagata. Okay, so let us end with the sharing of the merits. Akasata chabumata devanaga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu sasanam. Akasata chabumata devanaga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu desanam. Akasata chabumata devanaga mahitika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakantu mangparam. Etavata ca amhehi sampadam punyasampadam. Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. Etavata ca amhehi sampadam punyasampadam. Sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya.